If we truly are made of energy, if everything's made of energy, that means it can all, it's all mutable. It could be manipulated and shifted and transformed and transmuted. So why would a propensity to overdrink or over anything to excess, why would that be any different?
Welcome to Consciously Speaking, exploring the evolution and revolution. On Consciously Speaking, you'll be introduced to guests from all walks of mindful development. Spark up your spirituality, crank up your consciousness, and mend your mind right here on Consciously Speaking with your host, Michael Neely.
Hello, conscious explorers. Welcome to your home base for mindful awareness and waking up. I'm your host, Michael Neely, and you're listening to Consciously Speaking. If you've been tuning in for a while, you already know this, but if this is your first time here, I'll let you know that right now we are in our interim period, and that's the space between Season 1 and Season 2. So during this time frame, we've cut back to 3 shows a week for the moment, and today's episode happens to be our topical content show. This interim episode is being brought to you by sponsor and affiliate partner Touched and Transformed. If you're looking to make a breakthrough in your relationships, your life, and your business, get a hold of the free chart you'll find on the link at my website, www.michaelneely.com, or you can find that link on the show notes. It's a great bird's eye view of your type, and once you've got that, you'll also receive a free assessment to find out what your type is if you don't already know it. Thank you, Ben, for sponsoring today's episode. So I'm excited to be joined today by Amy Scott Grant. You may remember her from episode 140 of season 1. Amy is a master intuitive healer with an uncanny knack for going straight to the root issue to get you clear using her masterful intuition and her own unique clearing methods. She's also known as the hilarious clairvoyant or Hillervoyant. You can find Amy at www.askamyanything.com. Welcome to the show, Amy. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me out, Michael. It's great to be here again.
It's a pleasure. And I'm going to let you introduce the topic since this was your idea and I think it's a great one.
So I find that when I talk about addictions, people bristle a little or they tend to identify for other people, right? Like addiction. Oh, yeah, my brother-in-law has that. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But it's a word that's kind of, you know, has a little charge around it for a lot of people. So today's topic is addiction, attraction, and sensitivity, because you might not have an addiction to a certain person, substance, emotion, situation, but you could have an attraction, like where you sort of keep creating this pattern over and over. And I think, and also when we talk about food, you know, there's a big difference between addictions and sensitivities and even allergy. There's a difference between allergies and sensitivities. But it all kind of, as we're going to find out today, it's all kind of rooted in the same thing. And you can actually take a very similar approach to clearing it, as opposed to a lot of people's solution for addiction is to simply manage it, right? By staying away from that addictive substance or person.
One of the things about addiction, and I'm curious to get your point on this, because I bring this topic up to anyone that I'm talking to who deals with addiction factors, and that is Alcoholics Anonymous, for instance, and being an alcoholic, they consider it a disease and that it's something that you're afflicted with for life. And I believe that actually creates more of a challenge to approach it from that perspective, because I believe it's just as with any other thing that we might be addicted to, it's a mental habit that we've created. And I don't necessarily buy into the addiction piece in that respect that you are, you know, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, it's, I agree, because, you know, like my whole shtick is about clearing, right? That's my whole foundation for what I believe in, the work that I do, and what I help people to move beyond and create breakthroughs around. So to say that, well, this is just what you've got and you're stuck with that forever, so let's figure out how to work around it, that just does not fly for me at
either.
All. If we truly are made of energy, if everything's made of energy, that means it's all mutable. It could be manipulated and shifted and transformed and transmuted. So why would a propensity to overdrink or over anything to excess, why would that be any different? Right. And, you know, you think about it's not just little kids, it's adults. If you say, do not touch that, the kid will look you right in the eye and reach over with his hand and touch it.
Exactly.
But you, all I heard was touch that, mommy. That's all I heard. That's all I heard. It's no different. Your brain almost like filters out don't, not, and no, right? So when it's like, do not have alcohol ever again. If you don't even like to drink, you're like, God, all of a sudden I want a glass of wine. Like out of the blue, you will not tell me what I can and cannot do.
Yeah.
So there's the, you know, there's the, I don't want to, and you can't make me, you're not the boss of me. There's all of that energy, but there's also the whole like forbidden fruit thing that if you say it's off limits, you want it more than ever. So I feel like, you know, with any kind of anonymous type group, whether it's, you know, Overeaters Anonymous, I've heard is like the main focus is stay away from sugar. That's like pretty much, that's, I have a friend who's a weight loss coach and that's what she says. She went to Overeaters Anonymous. That was all they told her was you just stay away from sugar. Like you just stay away from
it.
Avoid
it like the plague.
Right? And then, so what do you want? God, you want like a piece of pie more than anything. You hear that? I didn't want pie until you said no sugar. Now I want pie. And I want three pieces of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that, I think that creates more energy and more of a charge, which makes it that much harder to overcome. You know, and if you, Michael, I don't know if you're familiar with Human Design, but it's been around for maybe a dozen years or so. But when I first was learning about Human Design, which is it's the most accurate chart reading I have personally ever seen in terms of who you are and how you're built and how you were sort of born to function and operate, right? Because it combines the Kabbalah, the I Ching, the chakra system, and astrology. So highly, highly accurate. Well, when I first started learning about Human Design, I realized that only like 10% of the population, according to Human Design, and of course, you know, I teach people how to truth test. You're welcome to check these numbers and see what you get. But for me, it resonates. Only 10% of the population is born with willpower. Now, I don't know about you, but when I heard that, I was so relieved, right? Because my whole life I kept thinking, and I'm not one of them. It's not in my chart. And I was like, man, my whole life I thought there was like something wrong with me because I couldn't like just summon willpower. Like it's so much effort and work for me to have willpower and to try to sustain it over time. And I would look at, you know, like hyperachievers who would say, well, you just decide you're going to the gym and I go every day and I never miss a day. And I'm like, damn, you know, that is not how I can't do that. There must be something wrong with me. And then I found out, no. That person was born with willpower. It comes easily to them to just decide they're going to do something and commit and follow through no matter what. For me, it takes a tremendous amount of effort to back up, you know, a decision and commitment that I make, right? Mm-hmm. And because integrity is important to me, I put in the effort, but it's definitely not easy, right? So when you consider that, if that's true, that such a small percentage of the population is born with willpower, no wonder so many addicts fall off the wagon because they're not built to be able to say, I will never drink again, and then actually follow through on that. They're not built that way. The other big issue that comes up with managing addictions versus dissolving them and clearing them is, and surely you've known people like this, Michael, we all have, where they get a handle on one addiction and then they create another, right? So the alcoholic who does decide that they will never drink again, they don't touch alcohol, but they're suddenly chain smoking or they're drinking, you know, 12 cups of coffee a day, or they've, you know, plunged themselves into work or some other type of obsession. Or, you know, like they create a different addiction or they become health nuts, right? I've seen people quit smoking and then become health nuts, like where they spend 4 hours a day at the gym and, you know, they only eat 1,000 calories a day and they're like obsessive, like food Nazis, right? So that's because nobody's dealing with the underlying issues of why do you feel like you need to escape reality by drinking so much in the first place? You know, what is the issue that's actually causing you to have a need for alcohol?
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Amy. And one of the things when I'm coaching folks is to look at what is that hole. For me, it's often that they're trying to fill this hole that can either be a real one or a perceived one in their mind that some for some people it's just boredom. They can't handle just sitting in silence even. So mm-hmm. when you work with someone on that, what are some of the things that you find that are, that is missing that's creating that addiction, if you will?
Well, before we go there, I want to blow your mind for a quick second.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Because you mentioned earlier that you felt like addictions were a mental habit that could be broken, right?
Yeah.
And transformed and reshaped. In my work with addiction, what I have discovered is there's different kinds of addictions. There's physical addictions, which we all know about, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a chain smoker for years and you try to quit cold turkey, your body will revolt because there is a physiological chemical reaction going on inside of your body and your cells. And, you know, any kind of drug or alcohol, whatever, you will have severe withdrawal symptoms. And that is the physical aspect of it. And it's not just, you know, we're talking about, we've been talking about like alcohol, right? But I want to really broaden this topic of addiction because you can be addicted to the wrong kind of relationship. You can actually be addicted to abusive language, meaning you keep attracting people into your life who want to beat you up verbally. You can be addicted to victim mentality. You like there's all kinds of stuff that you can be addicted to neatness and organization, right?
Yeah.
Some label it OCD, but you can actually be addicted to anything. It's not just things that are, quote, bad for you, right? Alcohol, drugs, smoking, whatever.
Right, right. Well, and here's one, and I don't know if you ever have people that experience this, but I have clients who are addicted to being poor.
Yes.
Which just blows me away and often blows other people away when they hear that. It's like, what? How can that be? But it absolutely happens.
And I tell you what I have worked with too is people that are addicted to loss. Or addicted to the need to overcome. So they continue to create circumstances and situations in their lifetime that present increasingly severe challenge, just like an addiction would progress. They create increasingly great challenges that they get to overcome so that they get, they're doing it like a drug, right? You know, you're a little tense, you have a cigarette, you chill out, oh, feel relaxed. It's that same kind of like, shoo, dodge that bullet, almost lost my job, saved the day, right? And that's what they're addicted to. But because it's an addiction, they can't just walk around for a week feeling good about the fact that they saved their job that they love or whatever. No, they have to go create the very next drama to go execute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's, as I was saying, there's like different types of addictions I've found. And so physical is the one that is probably the most relatable. You know, if you eat a lot of fried food and then you try to stop, you're going to go through some withdrawals because your body's like, no, we need more grease. We need more fat coming in, right? And then you don't eat fried food for, say, a month. And then you have fried chicken and you feel like you're going to throw up. Like you just feel nauseous because your body's like, whoa, what is this crap you're putting in here? So that we understand how physical addictions work, right? We crave it. We need it. People say they're addicted to chocolate. Maybe they're addicted. Maybe they're just attracted to it. Or maybe there's a pattern or whatever, right? But so we understand the physical. But there's also emotional addictions where, and this is kind of like, Michael, what you just mentioned, like, you know, being addicted to being poor could be an emotional addiction because there's some type of emotional charge or rush or payoff that comes with it, whether it's a belief that it's spiritual to be poor. So maybe they get to feel kind of pious mm-hmm. when they're, because they believe the chosen one equals suffering, right? If you're chosen by God or by spirit or by the universe, or you feel like you have a special role, you may also have this associated belief that says, well, you're going to have to suffer in order to, you know, because of this great responsibility that you have. So you could be addicted to the, you know, sort of lowliness, spiritual aspect of it. Or it could be, like I was saying, people that are addicted to loss or being the victim. There's some kind of rush that they get from that. It could be the feeling itself. It could be the response they get from other people. Because, you know, if we all know somebody who's like Calamity Jane, right? Like everything in their life just goes wrong and they're like walking around with this black cloud over them. Why do they do it? Well, I think the last time we talked, I might have mentioned suicide rebound, right? So it could be suicide rebound lifetime, or it could be that, or if I didn't, maybe you'll have me back out and I could talk about that because that's a pretty interesting topic too. But, or it could be that they have some emotional, you know, they get some emotional payoff when something goes wrong and they post that on Facebook or they're fussing and people comfort them, right? Yeah. Like, oh, I can't believe that happened to you. And they get hugs and they get, you know, because maybe they didn't get any attention as a child. And so empathy and sympathy is better than nothing, right? Yeah. So physical, emotional, but there's also mental addictions. And you nailed it. Like when you said boredom, some people just, you know, hit whatever alcohol, they hit the sauce, whatever their preferred sauce is, because they can't stand to be bored. It's like an aversion to boredom. And so how mental addictions show up is, for example, some people can't watch TV without munching, right? Like they have to have, even if they're not hungry, they have to have popcorn or a snack or something. And even if they try to break the habit by eating something healthier, they still feel like they have to be eating while they're watching TV yeah. or while they're watching a movie. So that's an example of a mental addiction. And how to know if you have a mental addiction is like, well, what do you typically do when you're bored? Like when you feel bored, do you tend to reach for the same thing? It might be a food or it might be something else. Maybe you play video games when you're not feeling, you know, stimulated.
Or even the watching the TV itself can be the addiction.
Oh, I mean, totally. Yeah. A lot of people are addicted to TV. And I have found TV to be, to have that sort of addictive quality too, right? Like I find the less TV I watch, the less TV I want to watch. But the more TV I watch, like over the summer, we're much more lax in our household, right? There's no homework. There's no early bedtime. So we end up watching a little more TV and more movies. Well, the more we watch, the more we want to watch. And then what happened when school went back in, I practically had a mutiny on my hands. What? We're not going to watch TV during the week? No, we don't. We never watch TV during the week. You just forgot.
Right. 3 months and it's out of your memory.
Yeah. Your brain turned to mush for the last 3 months because we watched so much TV. You forgot this is the regular rule in schools. It's, you know, everybody's got activities. It's crazy after school. There's no time for TV.
No way. And this is something that's really interesting that ties into what you were saying a while ago, Amy, and that is, as you talked about how we want this escalating obstacles potentially, you know, if that's what we're, our addiction is to the drama. Well, I've written a couple of screenplays, and so I've studied screenwriting, and one of my favorite definition of what a screenplay should be is that you have a sympathetic hero who must overcome increasingly difficult obstacles in order to achieve a worthwhile goal. So the reason I mention that is because I'm wondering, is so much television and movies, is that fueling this addiction? Because we get so used to seeing that, oh yeah, that's the way life is. You have to overcome more and more difficult obstacles. That maybe that's even fueling this addiction to drama that so many people have. Just
probably,
a curious thought
right?
there.
life imitating art, imitating life.
Yeah.
And what happens if the conflict isn't strong enough? That movie was boring. Don't watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it has to be some hardcore conflict to even matter. I've written some fiction myself. And that's what my writing coach would tell me. I don't feel like you have enough conflict here. And I'm like, really? She has all this internal angst. Like, is that not enough? Right? But like, and I mean, a great example of that is The Hunger Games, right? The whatever you think about her writing, it was a good story, I thought. All three of them.
Yeah.
And I thought the books were so much better than the movies because there was so much going on internally. You know, in the book, you could really feel her whole inner struggle. And she had a really wide spectrum of feelings. In the movie, she just looked pissed off the whole time. So it didn't like translate as well. You had a lot of physical conflict that you could, you know, be oohed and aahed over, right? But as far as the internal struggle, I feel like that just like kind of didn't, it's just nothing to do with the actress. I think it was just kind of the way the story is told, right? But we digress. So, but there's a fourth, there's a fourth type of addiction that I think most people never address, right? The physical, the emotional, you already knew about those probably. Even the mental, you might have had an inkling, if not a name for it. But here's the one that most people never think about, and that is spiritual. I have found that there are spiritual addictions, and all that means is that something happened in a past life And not just addictions, but also sensitivities and attractions. When you can't figure out where it came from in this lifetime, it's probably from a past life. Like, I'll give you an example. I figured out a few years ago that I have since cleared this. But at this point, a few years ago, I really could not tolerate soy at all. And every time, my husband and I love sushi, every time we would go eat sushi, by the time we got home, I would need to lie down. I was like, oh, I'm so tired. And so, you know, one day I was like, wow, what is this? Like, what about going to eat sushi is making me feel this way? Like, obviously, my body's having a reaction to it. I thought maybe it was all the white rice, right? I mean, that's a lot of carbs, you know, because we can put away a lot of sushi, I'll tell you that. So I thought it was the white rice. And so I tried, you know, getting sashimi like the next couple of times. But I still was tired. And I was like, it's so weird. Turns out it was the big bowl of edamame that we would eat when we sat down and the soy sauce. When I cut out the edamame and the soy sauce, I could eat as much sushi as I wanted with or without rice and have no adverse reaction. So I just stayed off soy completely for like a year. And then that was about the same time I started doing this work with people on addictions. And I realized I didn't actually have any physical sensitivity or addiction to soy, but I had a spiritual one. And it went back to, I had a past life where I was a soybean farmer. And somebody, I got into some kind of feud with like the neighboring farmer, and he burned my crops to the ground. And we lost everything because of it, like our whole livelihood. And that was the originating event from my issue with soybean. So I did my thing and I cleared that, what was unresolved around that experience. And then I could eat soy, no problem. Wow. Like no problem at all. It doesn't matter if it's, we try to eat organic, definitely soy, non-GMO, but any kind of soy I can eat and I have no reaction because it was no physical issue present. It was a spiritual issue. And wow. So that's the kind of thing, you know, that you don't really think to check for. Or right. Maybe you try and resolve other aspects of it, physical, emotional, mental, and it still doesn't go away. It's probably because there's some type of spiritual sensitivity or addiction there that's keeping it, you know, in your space and being an issue for you.
Wow. So you just said sayonara to that problem. Oh, okay. I need to take a break. Sorry about that bad pun, but it's time for a short break to hear from our sponsor. So hold on there. Today's episode is being brought to you by affiliate partner and sponsor Touched and Transformed. Ben Saltzman, a leading expert in using the Enneagram for both personal and business breakthroughs, is here to help you do just that. Break through the limiting aspects of your personality type. Ben has created a special video program just for you. And in this no-cost video training, Ben shares his passion and emotions as he describes the more connected, more relational, holistic way of being that's emerging in this planet and how you can do your inner work to be a part of that movement. So to start off, you'll get a chart that maps out the 9 personality types on the Enneagram and how each type pushes people away and sabotages relationships. And that's just the tip of the spear, so to speak, as you'll also receive several videos that will get right to the heart of your type. Now, these videos will show you the transformational path you can walk to dramatically improve your relationships, raise your vibration, and bring your life to a whole new level. Ben has been my personal coach, so I can tell you from experience, he knows his stuff. Get your free chart and the start of the training series at the link you'll find on my website, www.michaelneely.com, or on the show notes. Thank you, Ben, for sponsoring today's episode. And now back to the show. Amy, the thing that also came up to me during you're talking about the spiritual side of it, because when you first said that, I also realized that, at least in my experience, I've found that some people, in their urge to avoid an addiction, and like you said, we often just replace it with something else, I have found that many people replace their other addictions with spirituality. For instance, I was talking about how we aren't able to sit with our quiet or our boredom or just being alone and silent. And often people will take up meditation, which it's a great way to learn to just be in the moment. And then also I would caution people to not take it to the other extreme and become addicted to that as replacement for whatever else might be going on. Although if you're going to be addicted to something, I think that'd probably be a good one to get addicted to. But what are your thoughts on that?
I totally agree. I'll tell you a funny story. Years ago, I was working with a coach, and the two of us became friends. And she was talking to me one day, and she's really masterful at doing nothing. And this was sort of like mystical to me, because whenever we did stuff together, it was very much yin yang, right? Like, she's very zen and chill, and I'm like, ah, right? But she would tell, like, she would book her clients, because I don't know if you do this, Michael, but I know a lot of us will do, like, you meet once a week for 3 weeks and then you take a week off. Like, we kind of structure our month like that, right? Mm-hmm. But I just had people take their week off whenever. Well, she would book all of her offs were the same week. So she would work for 3 weeks out of the month and not work for 1 week out of the month. Now, as far as me, if I were to do that, you can bet there would be like a laundry list of projects that I was going to do on that week off.
Got to keep yourself busy, like, you know?
Yeah, I would be like, yes, I have a week off. I'm going to do this. I'm going to repaint the house. And I'm going to write, like, I'd have like all of this stuff that I couldn't possibly finish in a week. But I'd be excited about the prospect of it. No. She would plan nothing. Nothing. Maybe have a lunch one day with a friend, but there was no packing this week for her, and she would just hang out and do nothing. And this sort of like mystified me, right? So I was talking to her one day, she was at my house, and I said, oh, so the other day I was doing nothing. And she goes, really? You were doing nothing? What were you doing? And I go, I was reading a magazine. And she goes, no, that's not doing nothing. That's reading a magazine.
Yeah.
Which to me was like nothing, right? Because I wasn't accomplishing anything. And I said, oh, well, she goes, well, think, have you done nothing at all this week? And I go, yes, I actually did, because yesterday I took a nap. And she goes, no, that's napping. That's not doing nothing. And then my head was starting to hurt, right? And I'm like, well, what do you do when you're not doing anything? And then it was like, oh, it started hit me. It was like a koan, you know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? It's just, my mind went totally still. And I went, oh, you don't do anything when you're doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I have met so many people. It was a huge epiphany for me, right? But I have met so many people that when I've shared this with them, it's been like a real awakening for them, right? It's like, wait, what do you mean do nothing? It's just sort of a foreign concept for people that are type A, go, go, go. We're focused on results and accomplishment and achievement. And, you know, we have a lot to do. So we're going to get through all this so we can get through more stuff and more stuff and more stuff. It's like it's very counterintuitive to just sit and not do anything. And ever since that day, when I started to incorporate doing nothing into my life, it's hard to explain, but my productivity like tripled. So yeah. It's like such a kind of mind bender, right? Because you just, when you get in this do, go, go, do mode, you think you have to keep doing more, right? So just like you're saying, if you remove the addiction, not in the way I'm talking about removing it, but you say, I'm going to shut this door and not do this anymore, then all of a sudden there's all this space to fill. And it's like, well, what am I going to do with the space? So we end up wanting to put something else to fill up that space. And that's how people just trade off addictions one for the other. Okay, I might not be a sex addict anymore, but now I'm going to start smoking, chain smoking. And now I'm going to become obsessed with, I don't know, baseball statistics, whatever, right?
Well, yeah.
You create a new obsession to fill the space. When if you actually would just stop and do nothing, it's very, very, very uncomfortable at first. Like, I got agitated. Actually, it was hard for me to stay awake at first. I would fall asleep. And then I'd get mad because I fell asleep. Right? Damn it. I took a nap. I didn't do nothing. But I would try again. And so it was, and I tell people this too, like, you have to just be patient. It's going to feel really weird and uncomfortable at first. And then it'll feel less weird. And then you'll do it and you'll think, oh my God, I'm doing it. And then you start to watch how your life changes, and it's kind of mind-blowing.
It really is, yeah. Amy, one of the practices I have people do, and I don't know if you habitually in your living space use always the same chair, or you tend to always sit. There are chairs, there's furniture I don't actually sit in my home, because it's mm-hmm. just not part of my routine. So I have clients do this, and I'll often do it just as a practice myself, sit in a different spot than you normally sit, no music on, no sounds, preferably even nobody around, and just sit and look at the room. from a different perspective and do nothing but just sit. And then sometimes even if it's outside, but these little practices, you're right, they're absolutely uncomfortable at first. You have such an impulse to be, well, I should be doing something. Well, what am I doing here? I'm doing nothing. That's not cool. All these things are going to roll through your head rapidly and over until you finally just go, oh, this is interesting. It's a different perspective. Even on my own home, my own living room that I'm in all the time, you can still see everything so differently. So I love that as a first step towards breaking either an addiction or even the attraction or sensitivity that we're talking about. It can really loosen that stuff up so you start to see, oh, I notice that I feel this urge to do something simply because it's hard for me to just sit here and be. You mentioned as part of the topic for today is the sensitivity piece. So go a little more into your perspective on that so our listeners can get a feel for what you mean by it.
Yeah, sometimes, well, and I have to tell you, I totally do that with sitting in other places. And it's really fun because then my four-year-old is like, Mommy, where are you? Mommy, because I'm not in my office or I'm not in the kitchen. It's like, no, I'm sitting in the little love seat in the front room or whatever. But you know what I like to do too? This is a little crazy, but it works for me. Is I like to sit upside down on the sofa. So like I'll put my legs up over the back of the sofa and my back is where your butt would normally go. And then I let my head just sort of dangle off the edge of the sofa. Because talk about getting a different perspective.
Right.
You get a whole different perspective of the same room that you're always in. Not to mention you get this awesome rush of blood to your head. Which like stimulates the brain, and I'm sure you could look it up, has all kinds of, you know, it's like inversion tables. It's just, but you don't have to spend $300 to get the effect. It's probably not as good for your back, but it is good for your head, right? And it does, it's fun, and my kids like to do it too when I do it. But yeah, so sensitivities, I think some people are prone to use the word addiction in a lot more circumstances than it's necessary. Just kind of like a sort of a colloquial slang kind of thing, right? Like, oh my God, chocolate. I'm so addicted to chocolate, you know, or I mean, totally addicted to cheesecake because they had cheesecake 3 times in a month. So they think they're addicted, right? And it's a word we kind of throw around, but that could merely be like a strong attraction. Like you really, really like cheesecake or anything, spinach, cheese, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's also things you think you could never give up because you think you're addicted to them. And that is very limiting in and of itself. Like my youngest is sensitive to dairy. And every time I check in, it's just not optimal to clear it for him. I figure it's probably safer for him not eating it. Think of all the inflammation he's avoiding by not eating dairy. But anyway, you know, and when sometimes when that gets mentioned to other people, they'll say something like, oh, I could never go off dairy because I'm totally addicted to cheese. No, you're not. You know, 9 times out of 10, you're not. You just love it. You have a strong attraction to it and you probably eat it frequently. So your body then craves it and wants more of it. But if you were to stop eating cheese, you may or may not miss it. You know, if you truly can't stop, you make up your mind to stop and you literally cannot stop, well, then there's probably an addiction there. But if you were to stop and say after a couple of weeks, you're like, yeah, I really miss cheese and you ate cheese and you loved it. You weren't like, ugh, my body's not responding well to this. You were like, oh, this is so good. Then you probably just have a strong attraction to it. Why does this matter? This sort of demarcation between the two or distinction, why does it matter? It matters in how we address it if we're going to heal it. Because if it's just an attraction, then there's likely some judgment that you have around it to clear. I mean, maybe you are strongly attracted to, let's just say, chocolate, and you think it's an addiction. Like you think that you're eating way too much chocolate and it's really bad for you. But I could come in or Michael could come in as an objective third party and check and be like, yeah, you know what? You're testing fine for chocolate. Like it's not, there's no problem here. Well, then the problem's between your ears. So there's some judgment that you have about maybe chocolate is too good and you believe you shouldn't have too much of a good thing. Or maybe when you were a kid, you were taught chocolate was a treat and you aren't feeling worthy of having treats as often as you've been having chocolate. right? So there's, 'cause there's some type of emotional or mental or psychological issue to be resolved versus, is it actually an addiction? Well, in which case there is something to clear and there's something to do around it. And then in terms of a sensitivity, you know, this is when not just food, but also like certain people, this is when it becomes, it takes a little sort of thought and sorting on your part to figure out what's going on. For example, if you are sensitive to a food, it can be really hard to nail down that food, right? Because we eat a lot of different things, most of us, during the day. And we typically don't eat, you know, like, do you just eat one cup of spinach plain and then an hour later you eat one banana? No, right? You have a salad. So you have ingredients in the salad and you have ingredients in the dressing and it's all mixed up together. And maybe with that salad, you're eating some chicken or steak or like you're having a whole meal that's got a ton of ingredients in it. So then it gets tricky to try and figure out if I don't feel good after I eat. So it's like my sushi story, right?
Yeah. What caused the problem?
Not when the rice. Okay, well, maybe it was the soy. And so, okay, oh, I forgot about the soy sauce. So it was really like three trips to the sushi restaurant before I was like, oh, that's what it is. So, but it doesn't have to be process of elimination. You can use truth testing. You can use a pendulum. There's ways that you can check in. You can, you know, work with somebody that's intuitive and can check in for you who has less of an attachment around it. But if you have a sensitivity, I see another part of the reason that people don't want to look at addictions and sensitivities is because we have been taught that the best way to handle an addiction is to avoid that substance entirely. And I knew for years that I was addicted to sugar, but I didn't want to talk about it or think about it because I didn't want to give up sugar. I was not ready, you know? And then when I got to that point where I was like, okay, I'm ready to totally give this up, because that was still my mentality at that point in my life was, well, in order to deal with an addiction, you must give it up entirely. So I decided I would give up sugar. I had reached that point where I was like, okay, this is not good for my body. I have to walk away, because I was the person, you know, you go to people's houses and they have like a bowl of candy out. That always baffled me. I'm like, who could do that? That would not last 5 minutes.
Exactly.
In front of me, I'd be like, jelly bean, jelly bean, jelly bean. Oh, end of the bowl. Damn it. I have to buy more jelly beans. But it would like baffle me that people could have entire bowls of candy lying around their house that stayed full all the time. It was crazy to me because I was an addict. I was addicted to sugar. And I decided I would clear the sugar addiction, and I did the Master Cleanse, and that was my intention for that first Master Cleanse, was I wanted to clear my sugar addiction. And I have to tell you, like, the freedom on the other side of that addiction is difficult to put into words because it's so profound. Here's the difference. Before, I could not eat sugar if it was in front of me. It didn't even, like, I don't care for cheesecake, right? Because I really don't eat dairy. But if there was cheese, if we went to a buffet and there was cheesecake, I was having cheesecake because I was addicted to sugar and it was a sweet, right? And I would eat it, be miserable afterwards, but hey, it was sugar. So I couldn't keep candy in my purse. Like if candy or sugar was around, it was into my mouth unconsciously. I couldn't even control it. After I cleared the addiction, it didn't matter. Like it was like it was night and day. Someone could say, dessert could be out, a bowl of candy would be out. If I didn't want it, I didn't even notice it. And if I saw it, it was like if somebody offered me, you know, a piece of chicken, I'd be like, I don't know. Do I feel like chicken? I would just think about it. I would either say yes or no based on what I wanted. Versus the old way that we learn to manage an addiction is, no, you can't ever have sugar. So then what happens when you go to somebody's house and they're passing around pie or brownies and you have to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't have, and you have to feel crappy and you have to, you know, or you have to be pious about it. Like, well, my doctor says I can't eat sugar and it's this big thing and it becomes part of your identity. Right. And there's all this energy around it and you want it. You can't have it. And you want to rip the one out of the girl next to you that's eating it. You want to snatch it out of her hand and shove it in your mouth. Like, how dare she eat that in front of me? I can't have sugar. That's the difference between having an addiction and the addiction's cleared. It's like there's a whole profound, massive freedom around it. And then sugar or alcohol or sex or work or whatever you are addicted to becomes like candle, doorknob, dad. Like, it's no big deal. Like, oh, it's it's a bowl of candy. What do you do?
I don't know. I used to be addicted to doorknobs, so I can't use that one.
I read that about you on the internet. But the sensitivities can be cleared as well, right? And whether it's food or whatever, the trick is figuring out what you're sensitive to. And the reason I tell the story about the difference between, you know, clearing the addiction versus managing the addiction is a lot of people know on some level that they're addicted to something, but they don't want to deal with it because they're not ready to give up that substance or that person or that type of relationship or whatever. And that's what I want people to hear is you don't have to give it up. You know, it's when you clear the addiction, you can then be, for example, an alcoholic who clears the addiction can have a beer or a glass of wine if they want to. There's no more, oh, I can't have one because if I have one, I'll have two. And if I have two, I'll have six. And then I'll be passed out on the floor. That element is gone, but so is the underlying cause of that. So then they don't go jump into another addiction.
Yeah, and for me, one of the ways that I'm, when I'm coaching clients in that, is to give them back the power of choosing. And so instead of looking at it like you're giving something up, what are you really choosing? You're not choosing to give something up. You're choosing to feel better in the morning. You're choosing to not end up on the floor after six drinks later. So it's also a way of, you know, reframing it from that point of giving up, because nobody wants to give up something. Like when I look at things that I really enjoy, if I look at it like, oh, well, I'm giving up wine. I love wine. And if I were to look at it like I'm giving it up, that'd be really difficult to do. But if I look at it like, you know what, I'm not going to drink wine today because I know that I won't feel as good in the morning. It it shifts it enough and it loosens some of that pull that it has on you. And the other piece I wanted to say about, you mentioned early on about the allergy piece, is I think a lot of people with alcohol, it's more almost like an allergic reaction. Some people, I think, just can't drink it because if they do, then other stuff happens to them, you know, like a belligerent drunk or some people who it just kicks in some other stuff in their system and it's not.
Or a weepy drunk.
Yeah.
Nobody.
I love you so much, Amy.
You're so beautiful.
So, yeah. So it's there's so many elements of this, and I know we could go on and on, but we need to tie it up now because we're reaching the end of our time frame here. What would you like to leave our listeners with today that's a real juicy take home that they could apply to perhaps if they're dealing with something that they feel is an addiction, an attraction, or a sensitivity?
I would say, for starters, be careful with your language. You know, if you catch yourself saying, oh my God, totally addicted to Taylor Swift or whatever. Now it's probably below our age demographic for the show, but right. I'm totally addicted to this new novel series or this show on Netflix or whatever. Just stop and say, you know, are you really addicted or are you just enjoying it so much that you want to binge watch the whole season? You know, everybody's going through that now because Netflix is sort of changing the way that we watch shows, right? And so binge watching doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. We've got this sort of aversion to binge, right? Like, you know, there's probably something wrong with you if you could watch one episode a week of Orange is the New Black. I can't. Every time a season comes out, I'm like, okay, clear my calendar for 2 days. I'm just watching the whole
show. I'm binging.
It doesn't mean I'm addicted to it. It means I really like it and I want the instant gratification. And if it's not interfering, it's really with addictions, you know, is it interfering with your happiness and well-being in some way? So yeah. I don't get sleep for a couple of nights because I'll stay up till 4 a.m. watching episodes, you know, but that it lasts for a couple of days and it's over until next year, right? This is a whole year before another season. But if I was addicted to, say, video games, and I was up till 2 a.m. every night, and then I was dragging ass in the morning, and I didn't feel like I was giving 100% to my clients, and I was, you know, cranky with my kids as I'm getting ready for school. Well, then it's impacting my life, and it's worth taking a look at. But if it's not an addiction, don't call it an addiction. Let's not manifest something that's not there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on the flip side, let's take an honest look at what is there. Is it having an adverse impact on your life, your happiness, your physical well-being, your relationships? Maybe it is time to label this an addiction, but don't feel like it means it's going to be out of your life forever. It just means there's something that wants to be brought to your attention that's ready to shift and transform so that you can grow past this and be able to, what's the expression? Enjoy responsibly.
Yeah, beautiful. And hey, you know, the thing is for our listeners out there, if you do feel like there's something that you're not quite sure what it is, get a coach. Try Amy at AskAmyAnything.com or get a hold of me at MichaelNeely.com. That's what we're here for. So reach out, get a coach. I have a coach. I'm sure Amy's probably got her own coach.
I got a couple of them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we all need it. It's I use the analogy as well. It's like professional basketball players. I don't care how good your game is, you still got a coach. So do that. If you're dealing with this and you want some help, reach out, get a coach, and take action. And thank you, Amy, for joining me today on such an interesting topic. It sounds like we could probably do a couple more episodes on this, but it's so much fun to have you with me today, and I really appreciate your time.
Oh, I appreciate you having me out, Michael. Congratulations on wrapping up your first season. That's awesome, and I look forward to what you have next on the horizon.
Oh, thank you so much. You've been listening to Consciously Speaking with me, your host, Michael Neely. Tune in Monday through Friday for conversations with today's premier conscious thought leaders, authors, and coaches. On Saturdays, you can find peace of mind through a guided meditation with a variety of guest leaders. And on Sunday, don't miss our topic of the week, where you can join a deep dive into issues that matter the most. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and a review. You can learn more about the show, check out the guests' bios, leave comments and feedback at www.michaelneely.com. Until next time, live without limits.